morning. Oh, good job. So for those of you who know me, following directions isn't really one of my strong suits, I would say. So apparently I need to stand between here and the poinsettia. So if you see me kind of doing this, then just kind of, I don't know, wave or laugh or shout or something like that. So I wanted to start by telling you a story. Partly because I'm a bit nervous, but partly because most of the things that I learn usually come from making mistakes. So a number of years ago, Sarah and I had the chance to live in a very remote village in northern BC. And it was about a 24-ish hour drive from Campbell River. And so our typical schedule was we would be in community for about 11 weeks at a time, and then we'd return home to Campbell River for about 5 weeks just for some rest. And so it would usually take us about 3 days. And so we would drive up to Prince George, and then we'd spend this sort of eight-hour epic day of grocery shopping for 3 months. And then the last day was this sort of 8, 10, 12-hour trip on logging roads to get home. And so me being who I am, I was always fixed on the destination. And so, you know, I think I always had in my mind, you know, that of, you know, we're in our house in Quaracha, and I'm sitting on the couch with Sarah, telling her how much I love and respect and appreciate her, and the kids are in bed, and the truck's parked, and the truck's unpacked. But of course, you know, that's not how it works. And so as we're on our way up, something always, you know, went wrong, often fairly catastrophically wrong, to be honest. We have a fair bit of what a friend of mine calls custom bodywork on our truck. So I have a very wise wife. And so what Sarah would say to me every time is, Jeff, you know, stop, look around, pay attention, reflect, because there's joy in the journey. And I have to tell you that I think 10 years later, I'm starting to understand what she was talking about. And that's really what I want to share with you this morning. And so if this doesn't make any sense at all, in the next 33 minutes, you should talk to Sarah, because I'm sure she could tell you in a couple of minutes and it'd probably make more sense. So, where do we start? Well, like any story, you start at the beginning. And so, in the beginning, God, our Creator, made everything. And after He made each thing at each day, He said it was good. And then at the end of the sixth day, when He'd finished making, He said it was very good. And then, after that, and so, you know, we can call that the beginning. And then after that, we have Adam and Eve, and they're in relationship with God in the garden. And somehow, they don't recognize, they don't appreciate, they don't see what they have in their relationship with God, and so they choose something else. And we call that fall. And you know, I think it's easy to look back and say, how did they not realize what they had? But I can tell you, you know, if you looked at my life, you would see that somehow, I'm always hungering for something else, something more, something different, something exciting. But I don't always reflect on the fact that what I have from God is enough, and it is what I need. And so I don't think I'm alone in that. And so I can really relate to Adam and Eve. And so after this, there's this rescue plan that's underway. And all through time, God has been telling His people about this rescue plan. And sometimes in Scripture, it's, you know, maybe little stories about it. And other times, it's really clear. And there's a ton of passages in the Old Testament that tell us about this rescue plan that's underway. In Isaiah 9, verse 6, and this is a verse that I think probably some of you have heard before, it says, "For a child is born into us, a son is given to us, the government will rest on His shoulders, and He will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace." So, we have the beginning, and we have the change. Something happened, then things started to get better, and then eventually, we have Christ dying and resurrecting and ascending, and we're moving towards that restoration part. So let's look at our story today, and I, I really appreciated the Advent lighting, and for some reason there was a family over here somewhere and they were making a ton of noise and being distracted. So sorry about that. It'll happen next week. So, you can go to the next slide. So the story goes something like this. So Mary and Joseph, they go to Bethlehem, and Christ is born, and they put him in a feeding trough, and they're in this cave. And there's these shepherds in the field, probably close to Bethlehem, and they're watching their sheep. So I thought I would share with you, have you ever played Two Truths and a Lie? So we had the chance to play with this with Pastor Jeff once, and he's a really good liar. So just watch it. But anyway, so I'll tell you something about me. I won't play the game. I'll just tell you. So I'm a shepherd, and you might not have known that. And I wouldn't say I'm a good shepherd, but we do actually, we just live down the hill from here, and we have some sheep. And we actually got our sheep from Bethlehem, if you can believe it. My parents actually were just visiting Bethlehem. And so about 10 years ago, approximately, there was Bethlehem here at the church, and so Glenn Teedy was the shepherd, and he had his robe and his crook, and so at the end of Bethlehem, we actually bought two sheep, I think, from the Teedys, and so Glenn actually brought them to our house, and he showed up at the door in his shepherd's robes with the crook, and so Caleb, who's now 17, but I think he was about 5, 6 at the time, he told, it's either my parents or your parents, Sarah, we got sheep, and the shepherd from Bethlehem brought us the sheep. So I can't really relate to the shepherds, but I am a shepherd, not a good one. I love looking at Scripture and seeing how God works, because God's ways are not our ways. And so, you know, you look at, why did it take so long? Why did God wait so long for Christ to be born? Why did he pick the shepherds? So if you look at the society at the time, they were about as low on the list as you could be. And so their testimony was not acceptable in court. So if a shepherd told you something, you wouldn't believe them. But God chose the shepherds. And I think, you know, for you think, so who were the first eyewitnesses after Christ was resurrected? Well, it was three women. Yeah, Mary, and Joanna. And again, nobody would have believed them because they are women. But that's who God chose. So, Luke 2. That night there were shepherds staying in the fields nearby, guarding their flocks of sheep. Suddenly, an angel of the Lord, I thought he was like a 1970s angel, Brian. I don't know where you are, but I like the collar and it's very good. Suddenly, an angel of the Lord appeared among them, and the radiance of the Lord's glory surrounded them. They were terrified, but the angel reassured them. "Do not be afraid," he said. "I bring you good news that will bring great joy to all people. The Savior, yes, the Messiah, the Lord, has been born today in Bethlehem, the city of David." And so the part that we're going to focus on today is this little section. We're talking about joy. So the angel says, "I bring you good news." And so that word, sometimes it's translated as proclaim good news, but that's where, so if you see in the Bible where it talks about the gospel, so that's the words that are being translated there. Proclaim good news, bring good news. That will bring. So they're talking about the future. Great joy. And I was pleased to hear that you pronounced it, so I'm not going to try the word, but the word great means heavy. And then it says to all people. I think it's interesting, and Brian actually mentioned this, that there's only the one angel, and you think of how terrifying the angels are and sort of God's grace at just sending the one at the beginning. So what is joy? And we talked about this. So in the Old Testament, the word that's used, it means to be excited. And in the New Testament, the Greek word means intense joy. And there is this intensity to joy. So different emotions have different intensities. So if you look at sadness and then you look at, say, despair, they have different intensities. And so joy has this intensity. Sometimes joy can be kind of stretched out, or sometimes it can be a really sort of brief thing. It's an emotion. or at least part of it is anyways. But it's more than that, it's a quality. And for those of us who know Christ, that quality is grounded in God, it's from God. And somehow it's connected to love. And we'll talk about that. And it requires reflection. And for those of us who know Christ, there's this anticipation that of the joy we'll have when we're with Christ in heaven forever. So, bet you've never seen a picture like this in church before. So joy is an emotion. And we, as people, are created in God's image. And there's a physical nature to us. And there's a spiritual side to us. So joy is real. We know that when Christ was on earth, he experienced emotions. Joy, sadness, grief, anger. We have these emotions. They are real. And I think sometimes we get scared of emotions. But God did hardwire us to experience emotions. And like I said, joy is not just an emotion. It's a quality. It's connected to God. It's from God. So some researchers played. There's this type of MRI where you can do a video. It's called a functional MRI. And they played joyful music. And you can see there's certain parts of the brain that actually light up. And then fearful music. And it's different parts of the brain. So God did create us. He made us to experience joy. You know, I think it's interesting because the Greeks and the Egyptians actually thought that our thoughts, our emotions, came from our heart. It had to do apparently with the heart being in the middle of the body. And of course now, you know, we think a lot of these things come from our brain, and that's probably partly true. But I have a feeling, you know, it's easy for us to look back and think, oh, why did they think that? And I'm pretty sure that in 20 or 30 years, we'll look back and think, oh, remember when we had those pictures of orange and blue dots? We had no idea. Because I think the way God made us is far more complicated than we understand. But we are fearfully and wonderfully made. And we do have physical bodies that do experience emotions. Go to the next one, please. So I wanted to take a minute to just talk about trauma and depression and grief. So trauma. So we live in a world where bad things happen. And, you know, sometimes I do bad things, sometimes bad things happen to me. And, you know, if you look around, there's a lot of hard things that happen. And when we as people, as humans, when we experience trauma, it impacts us. When you start to layer on trauma after trauma, it really impacts us. So if you break your leg and, you know, let's say you break your thigh bone and it's crooked, right? And so you don't get it fixed at the beginning, but later on you go, you know, it could probably be fixed. You know, somebody could straighten it out. It might be tricky and it might take a bit of extra work. Maybe it might need an operation or something like that, but it can be fixed. And that's how it is with trauma in our brains. You know, when we get exposed to lots of trauma, it actually does rewire our brains. And so our ability to experience emotions, including joy, it changes. And so I think that's something we really need to consider because, you know, when we talk about joy, and this is the part where it is a gift from God, it's not about just saying, oh, well, I'm supposed to be joyful. I should feel happy. Okay, I'm happy. You know, my life's falling apart and I've exposed all these terrible things, but, oh, I need to be happy. No. What about depression? So this is how I think of depression. So all of us in life have emotions, right? They go up, they go down, and so something good happens, and maybe you feel happy, and then something bad happens, and you feel sad. And maybe we might pray or read the Bible or meditate or be with others or not be with others or exercise. And all those things kind of, you know, adjust our emotions. So depression is when you feel sad most of the time, but all those other things that usually help, they don't help. And they don't help you feel better. And again, I think we really need to consider that. And grief. So grief is usually when something terrible happens. And we get all these emotions like frustration and sadness and blame and anger. And in all of these things, typically it's not the type of thing that you can improve on by yourself. Now, I believe in miracles and I believe in prayer. And also in these things, often you know, we need to get help. And so if that's you, and actually this is most of us, you know, See your doc, see your NP, talk to your pastor, because that's what I'm not saying today is if that's you, that you should think about joy and be joyful. Go to the next one, please. Okay, so back to our story. So we've got the beginning part of the story, right? Creation, and then something happens, and then there's this rescue plan and the restoration underway. And the reality is, so this is God's story. And there's the big God story, the one that lasts, you know, from forever to forever. And then this story, and so this pattern, you know, it exists in every story that's ever been told. That's how God has wired us too, is to see this pattern. And so it might play out, you know, this morning, or this week, or this year, or through a decade. And, you know, some of these stories in our lives, we actually won't get to see the end of them. So we might not get to see the rescue, you know, for this three-decade-long part of the story that we're involved in. And we might not get to see the completion of the rescue plan and the restoration. But the pattern is real. And I think this journey that we see, it's really important when we talk about joy. So let's look in Luke again. So in Luke 15, Jesus tells three stories about joy. So the first one is... It's about a lost sheep. So you got the shepherd, and he's got 100 sheep, and he loses one. He realizes it. So he goes and he finds it, and he rescues it, and he brings it back, and he's joyful. So who is joyful? Well, the shepherd was. Well, why? Well, because he realized his sheep was missing, and he rescued it. And in this story, God's not talking about a shepherd. He's talking about God. And then there's this lady, this old lady, and she has these coins, and she loses one, and she realizes it, and then she tears the house apart looking for it. And then she finds it, and she's joyful. And she actually pulls in her neighbors and says, hey, be joyful with me. And then it says the angels are joyful because of one person turning. And so who's joyful? Well, in this case, it's the lady who found it, but it's also the people who weren't part of the story, her neighbors. They were joyful, and so were the angels. And then there's this story that Christ tells about this dad who has two sons. And the one son basically says to his dad, I wish you were dead. I want to have my inheritance now, and I'm out of here. And then eventually this son chooses to come back. And the dad is waiting, and he pulls up this long robe that he has, and he runs out to meet him, and he's overjoyed. So who's joyful? Well, the father is. Was he the rescuer in this story? No, he wasn't. Why? Because his son chose to come back, because he recognized his identity. And incidentally, the other brother in the story, well, he has jealousy over this. So Christ gives us three stories about joy, and I want you to think about it in this journey, because they all follow this pattern. And where does the joy happen? Well, it actually happens in different parts. So what else can we learn about Christ and joy? So some different examples. You can go to the next slide, please. So there's joy at Christ's birth, and that's the passage for today. Because Christ was born, there's joy. Jesus also talked, and this is from Matthew chapter 22, that being with him, being with Jesus, was like the joy at a wedding. And Christ also talks, and this is in John, it's sort of right around the Last Supper, and Christ talks about how there will be joy in his ascension and from his resurrection and receiving the Holy Spirit. So Christ gives us joy because of some of the things that he did, and how he's with us. And then Paul. What about Paul? So Paul found joy, and he told people in his letters how he found it. So one of the things that he said is he experienced joy in seeing others grow in relationship. So again, if you look at this from the story, he's a bit like the neighbors. You know, obviously he's part of the story, right? And he's supporting these people, but his joy is from watching them grow. And we'll talk about this later, but that joy is a gift that we get from the Holy Spirit. I was laughing this morning when I looked at the next one because it's in Peter, but I said it's from John, or from Paul. But anyways, both Peter and Paul talk about how joy and love are inextricably connected. So in Peter, he says, you love him even though you've never seen him. And though you do not see him now, you trust him and you rejoice with a glorious, inexpressible joy. So we have all of these examples of joy. And if you look through the Old Testament and the New Testament, you can find joy a million times. It's all over the place. But we know that there's something about it that has to do with change, with relationship, with love. And then the last one that I have here is suffering. So, and Paul suffered. Like, he really suffered, right? You know, he was shipwrecked. He was beaten. He was put in jail, you know, multiple times. But what he said is that somehow suffering for Christ is connected to joy. So great. So the disciples experienced joy when they're with Jesus. And I can appreciate that, but I have to admit it's sometimes that's tricky to relate to. So what about me? Like, what about today? How does this look? So I told you about Sarah's story at the beginning. So I think the key lies in us reflecting on what is God doing in your life today, yesterday, last week? And how does it connect to this story? And it's tricky because it's not always what you think. So sometimes something really great happens and we think that's the rescue, but it's not. It's the fall. And other times something terrible happens and it's part of the rescue. So we're up north still, and I have this person who's quite sick, and the closest the ambulance would come to us was about 4 hours from where we were. So I had this person, and I drove him out in my truck and met the ambulance at like 2 o'clock in the morning, and I'm driving back to the village, and it was breakup in the spring, and so the roads they vary depending on where you are. And so I was doing about 60, which is probably 20 too fast for this section, and I slid off the road into the ditch. And so now I'm an hour and a bit from the closest town, and of course there's no communications. And so I ended up calling my friendly neighborhood RCMP member to come pull me out of the ditch. And so he drove down and, you know, hooked the winch cable up, and of course the winch cable snaps and goes through the rear window. And so there's glass everywhere. And I'm still in the ditch. And so at this point I've been talking on the radio, so of course everybody knows, right? Pascal's in the ditch. You actually get a section of the road named after you when you go? No. I might have a few sections, actually. And so the grocery truck actually pulls me out, and I get back to the village and go to the RCMP station, and we build this sort of plexiglass and cardboard rear window. And so I've been working in this community, Seike, for 8 years at this point. We've been living up there for about 2 years. And so I'm doing home visits that morning like I'd done hundreds of times before. And so anyways, I go and I see this gentleman that I knew well, and he looks at me and he does one of these, he's welcome to the village. And so I was humiliated. I just had all these emotions, right? But that terrible thing was part of my rescue because, I mean, am I prideful? Oh yeah. You know, did I feel like I was bringing something there? Well, yeah. But, you know, part of my rescue had to do with, you know, humility. And I realized actually the most important person in a community like that is the person who drives the grader because they keep the roads and the runway open. I can assure you it's not the doctor. So how does your journey connect to the big journey? Go to the next slide, please. There's three parts in the New Testament that talk about joy always, like be joyful all the time. And I look at that and I think, are you kidding? Like, really? So Thessalonians 5, 16, it says, always be joyful, never stop praying, be thankful in all circumstances, for this is God's will for those who belong to him. So, are you ready? So I have a job for you. So I want to know, so how's it going? Are you joyful always? Do you pray all the time? Are you thankful? And go to the next one. So I tried to pretend I was the other Jeff. Okay, so just to put you at ease. Okay, so 0 to 10, okay, 1's like an hour a day. 10's like 10 hours a day. So pull out your phones, go to menti.com. So If I could have given myself like a 0.01, I would have, I think. But anyways, so this is me and one other person who will remain nameless. But come on, I want to see what you think. How about you? Are you joyful? You just have to go menti.com and then you put in that code. Thank you. Number three. If some of you says 10, we have some medications for that. Sorry, whoever just gave himself an 8. I think the irony of this is so I'm a professional at trying to decide what's wrong with something. I have a lot to learn about being joyful, that's for sure. And thankful. So we'll come back to this in a minute. You can maybe stay there for now, though. So how do we be more joyful? What does that look like? How do we experience that? Well, I think there's two things here. One of them is it's a little bit at a time. So I know one of the things that Pastor Jeff always says is, so what would it look like for me to be more like Christ next year than this year? And I have to say, so for me and the way my brain works, it's more like, I can't really think that far ahead, so it's more like tomorrow. So how would I be more joyful tomorrow? We can go to the next slide, please. Okay, so there's something about gratitude. So if you look at Adam and Eve, part of their sin was they were ungrateful. They didn't recognize what they had, and they chose something else. And so, you know, if you look at that bigger text of Thessalonians, what it's talking about is it's that loving God, loving people. So encouraging others, lifting people up, being good, not repaying evil for evil, loving others. And then we've got this joyful and thanksgiving and prayer inside of it. So being joyful is something that I think some of us struggle with. And so this is actually sort of something that we're seeing in the secular world, where they've sort of empirically come to understand this. But the reason it works is because this is how God made us. This is how God created us. And so when somehow, some way, when we focus on the good that's in our lives and how we can love others, that rewires our brains. And it actually changes how we're able to experience joy. So again, how is God working in your life? What's he doing? How is he changing you? And it could be at any part of that story. It could be in the rescue, but it could be in the fall. It could be simple. So Thursday morning, I was thankful for towels where I stayed, because the last time I didn't have towels and I had to use a shower or a sheet after I had a shower. So I was really thankful for towels and heat. Unfortunately, so be careful with this, because I'll tell you about this in a minute, but I also thanked God for a way to get home on Thursday morning. I'll tell you about that in a sec. Write it down. There's this famous Luther quote saying, Satan hates pen quills, I think is what it was. But writing it down, it forces you to commit. So write it down. And if you like your phone, there's apps for this. And just do it for a week. Because I can tell you, if you do it for a day, you'll notice a change. And so how is God working in our lives? How can we love others? Just think about it. Because somehow, God made us to do it. And it was interesting, they actually studied this. And so when they looked at, they were using this thing called pay it forward. So, you know, you're doing things for others. And what they found was when people were doing it out of guilt, it didn't work. And I think when you look at the New Testament, of course, that's what Christ says the whole time, is we do it out of love. Next, please. So Jeff was telling me that, you know, when he prepares for a sermon, you know, he clearly sees the acts and the blessings of God and the attacks from the devil. And so I thought I would tell you about my week. So I was working up north, and so it's about 1,000 km north of here. And so for those of you, the picture on the left is sunset. So so for those of you who are geographically oriented, you'll know that the sun sets in the west, which means that we're flying south when this picture was taken. And so, you know, I got up at 5 and flew up, and, you know, we're getting up there, and then there's a bit of fog in the valley right over the runway, and of course we can't land, so we fly back to Prince George, and the next plane isn't for 18 hours. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, well, I have 20 hours of work, and I now have 8 hours tomorrow to do this, and how's that going to work? So eventually I make it up there, and you know, busy week, good week, lots of stuff going on, lots of sadness. Christmas is a really hard time for a lot of people. It's not an easy time of year. And so I was really thankful that I got to be there. And anyway, so on Friday morning, I don't know if this has ever happened to you, but so you go to the runway and you get on the plane. And then the pilot says, I don't see your name on here, Jeff. And I, just about half an hour before that, I'd seen this gentleman who'd been in an accident in a logging camp, and we were going to send him to Prince George. And I said to him, I'm pretty sure I just gave you my ticket on the plane. Ha, ha, ha. But of course, I did. So I'm standing there on the runway with this RCMP member again. And then there was this other plane that I was trying to get to see if they'd pick me up, but if they didn't. And so anyway, so now I'm thinking, okay, well, how am I going to get home? And so God, in his great mercy, so this home care nurse that I work with, her name's Jean, I've known her for 15 years, and her husband's a pastor. So anyways, I get a ride back to Prince George with them, so 9 hours south. And so what do I get to do on my way home? Well, I get to talk about joy and gratitude and all these other things. And so anyways, they tell me this story. And so the story goes something like this. On Tuesday evening, so that the evening I didn't get there, they had a cookie exchange like we're doing out there. And in the exchange, afterwards, they played the I Can Only Imagine movie, and there was a number of young women who got to hear the gospel that night. And all of those women would have been at the clinic waiting to see me had I arrived. And, you know, it's funny how God works. So my brother, I come from a family of three boys, and so my youngest brother, Sean, died 15 years ago. And when he died, that was right around the time that song came out. And so that song means a lot in my family. And the true irony of this situation is I would have never known had I not had to drive out with Gene and Henry on Friday. And so I'm not going to lie, I was kind of frustrated. But because this was the other picture's the drive on the way out. But sometimes we actually do need to stop and reflect. Go to the next one, please. So, oh, there you go, perfect. So what about Mary? So Mary's amazing. I thought it was great that we sang that song this morning. Actually, I was out there hanging on to a three-year-old, but I got to hear the beautiful singing. Mary's really interesting. So you've got, you know, so you've got the angel, right? And then you've got the lots of angels. And then the shepherds, they go and they see Jesus and they recognize him. And then they leave and they tell everybody about Jesus. And then they go back to their fields and they're praising God. And then it says, Mary kept all these things in her heart, thought about them often. So she was reflecting on what God was doing in her life. And so this John passage, I've mentioned it a couple of times today. So the passage is a little confusing, but it goes something like this. So Christ is telling his disciples that he's going to resurrect and then he's going to ascend, and they're going to get the Holy Spirit. And he said it's a bit like a woman who's in labor, and then she gives birth, and then she has joy because she's brought a child to the world. And so I have had the chance over the years to witness a lot of people give birth. And so, you know, in this part of the story, I'm like the neighbor. It's not me, but there is a tangible joy that you see in suffering and in pain and all kinds of different things when that child is born finally. And it's that radiance, and it's really hard to characterize, but it's real. So Christ talked about it. And Mary got to experience that. And what was her response? Well, she reflected. So I want you to think, how is God working in your life? You might be the hero. You might be the one causing the problem. You might be the rescuer. You might be the neighbor. But God is working in your life. And all of those things are a part of his big story. But part of it is reflecting on what's that, how is that working? And when you do that, well, you'll have more joy.